Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 50 of the J Situation Podcast. I'm recording this on February 17th, 2021. Guys, you might notice I'm a day late with this. I wasn't even sure if I was going to be able to record this podcast because I wasn't sure if my laptop was going to have enough battery power because I wasn't sure if I was going to have power because Texas is going through the craziest winter storm right now. Like, okay, first of all, last time I saw snow like this in Texas, it was 1985. All right, so there's that. And then secondly, having lived outside of Texas, and you know, I've lived in places where it does snow and ice quite often. You know, Texas is not built for this. We're built for extreme heat. You know, we're not built for extreme cold. Not that this is necessarily extreme, but it is extreme for Texas. You know, it's not that Texas doesn't know what to do. It's just that it never needs to do it. So it's really not ready. You know what I mean? So basically, we have our own power grid in this state. And when there are units that go down and the use is high, that combines to, you know, be a potentially bad event. And so the powers that be have instituted first. Well, you know, the first thing they did was they instituted rolling power outages. To load balance. This is kind of a preemptive measure. It's a pretty extreme measure. I've never seen anything like this happen here, but they took the measure early. And then after that, they're like, you know what? We're just going to start shutting stuff down. And that's what they've been doing. I basically had it to where I had like 15 minutes of power and then 15 minutes of nothing. And then it was like 15 on, 15 off. And I was able to get some work done during the workday that day when it first started because I basically had my laptop, you know, plugged in. I had, you know, got my cell phone hooked up to it. I was lean and mean. I was making it work. But then the grid went down and the cell phone towers went down and it was a whole thing. And then it was like 12 hours between power. Then it was like 24 to where like I just got power like just now, and I've had it off for a while. I grilled some deer. You know, I was grilling deer meat earlier using charcoal, you know, because hey, you know, I have it, why not, right? I'm hungry, can't use the stove, may as well eat deer. And, you know, but right as I started eating, the power came on. I was like, oh man, how about that? So I ate my meal, you know, I drank a beer, filled my belly, you know, took a hot shower, you know, let the water heater heat up the water there. And here we are. Okay, what I've done is I put some UPS systems, some uninterruptible power supplies in line here with my rig here as I'm recording this. So if we lose power, I'll be able to pause the recording and get situated to kind of continue recording. And if I determine that it's not going to be feasible, I'll just stop and do this again later or some other time. But I figured, man, I couldn't get work done a whole day, you know, for anything. And then I was like, I want to do a podcast so badly. I thought about doing it in my car or in my truck. And I was like, that's weird. So, you know, power came on. I'm taking advantage. All right. Okay. We're going to see how it goes. Now, anyway, it should warm up soon to about 100 degrees in Texas. That's what it usually is. So we'll forget about this in like a week or something, I'm assuming, you know what I mean? Or maybe not. Maybe heads are going to roll because, you know, I was wondering. I was like, you know, I feel like natural gas pipelines froze. And I feel, not the pipelines themselves necessarily, but like some of the generating equipment. I think it's kind of a little more complex issue. I think they're probably going to take some actions to maybe prevent this in the future. I think we had some issues with some main sources of energy. So anyway, I don't know about all that. Not really concerned about that right now. But what I do know right now, what I'm pretty sure of, is that through rain, through sleet, and through snow, the J Situation Podcast, as always, is brought to you by Pew Science. Pushing the silencer industry forward one test at a time. Visit pewscience.com for the suppression rating, the simplest and most accurate hearing safe ratings for your suppressed small arms. The suppression rating is in section 5 of the silencer sound standard. The standard walks you through gunshot noise, sort of like Wikipedia, but it puts Wikipedia to shame because it's about guns. You know, it's all about silencer sound. There are now 7 parts, and they are all on pewscience.com for you to read. If you haven't seen it yet, it's fine. If you haven't seen the silencer sound standard, and you're like, what's that, Jay? It's fine. It's no problem. You can go there. You skip directly to the suppression rating in Section 5, and it lets you know how silencers stack up in comparison to one another with regard to sound at the muzzle and at the shooter's ear, and it gives you a hearing safe dose limit for the particular platforms on which they are tested. And you're not going to find this information anywhere else in the world. So I encourage you to check it out, you know, if you're curious. Now, the 6th section, you know, after you look at the suppression rating in Section 5, if you go to Section 6, that's where all the reviews are. That's the nitty-gritty, man. You can look at the analysis of each silencer to your heart's content there at pewscience.com. And if it's too much for you and you just want the bottom line, that's fine too. Added the 7th section to the standard. It's called the Pew Science Rankings section. And you can go and check that out. Section 7 rankings is the link on the website there, pewscience.com/rankings. You can click this little table and you can sort the table by the suppression rating at the muzzle and ear and the composite rating and look at the different manufacturers and all that good stuff and different silencers there. And if you see something you like in the table, You can there's a link to each review in the table as well, and then you can click the link and then you're good to go. You can go learn about the silencer. You know what I'm saying? Okay. So yeah, go wild. Now, as always, if you are a manufacturer listening to this, you know, you would like Pew Science to help you with private testing or maybe R&D, you know, consulting, there's a form on the website with which you can submit that inquiry. Your contact information, if you submit stuff through there, that's all confidential. Just goes to me. I'm the only person who sees that, and so it's all held in strict confidence. And you know, we do work for you. It's all confidential, unless of course you want to release it to the public, and we will certainly help you do that. And we've done that a few times, and you can see those reviews on the website that we have released that were funded by outside sources. They have a disclaimer just so everyone knows that is an external funding product, but yeah, that's private data from people that purchased testing services and consulting and R&D, and they're releasing the R&D to you, to all you folks listening for free. So that's just part of the Pew Science research cooperative nature of the beast. That's one of the benefits of Pew Science. Like I said, go to the website. And by the way, if you want to use that form, I know it is labeled for a request for quotation, you know, like an RFQ and everything, but you know, if you want to use that form to submit other things too, like for example, you have test data that you feel is very important for Pew Science to see and understand and consider an analysis and the state of practice, please, by all means, you know, use that form on the website and you know, just make sure the subject line is descriptive so I understand what you're kind of submitting there. And if you don't want to do that, you can email tech@pewscience.com, tech@pewscience.com, and I'll respond to you for sure. Okay. You can support this podcast and Pew Science and our testing by joining with a membership at pewscience.com. And you know, you can rate the podcast, a good rating on their podcast provider there if you like. You can spread the word about Pew Science. The more you do that, the more folks will realize that silencers and guns are awesome, which will benefit all of us through education. Okay, let's see if I can get through these topics for you guys today. We're racing against the clock, but I wrote down 4 topics. I got 4 topics for you today. All right, first topic, the SIG P210. It's almost ready. It's almost. So which silencer am I going to use? Which silencer for this gun? Do I wait for the Erector 9? Maybe not. We'll talk about that. Topic 2, centerfire pistol silencer sound signature. In actual use and meeting the need or meeting your needs, as a user, I want to say some stuff about that for you. We'll talk about that. Topic 3. This is important. Back pressure metric update. There is an impending revision 2 release of the back pressure metric. We are improving our methodology here at Pew Science, and I would like to talk about that on today's podcast. And topic 4, welcome to new Pew Science members. Thank you for your support. Okay, let's move into topic 1 at a time of 10 minutes and 23 seconds. Get some water because I like cranked up my gas heat in my house right now to like my furnaces to get it hot because it was, you know, super cold. And now the air is all dry, so I can't breathe. Okay, topic 1. Sig P210. It's almost ready, guys. Oh my goodness gracious. So which silencer am I going to put on this gun? So many options. I mean, am I going to wait for the Retro 9? Or is something else going to go on at first? You know, I tell you what, I got before this snowpocalypse occurred in Texas. I got the notification from Tornado Tech up in Oregon that my barrel is ready, that it has been threaded, and it is, in fact, on its way to me in the U.S. mail. So, boy, oh boy, it is time. It is time. Super sweet, super excited. Can't wait to shoot that gun. Cannot wait. You know, like I said before, several times, I think I've said this, I try not to shoot guns unsuppressed before shooting them suppressed. And if I can help it, I never shoot them unsuppressed at all. Like, it is just, you know, why? You know what I'm saying? So, like, you know, why would I not use a silencer? Like, so this is all going according to plan so far. It's going to be sweet, maybe. We'll see. Single stack, smooth 9mm goodness, suppressed, okay? I don't know. I say that to people, and I say, man, it's a single stack 9mm. They're like, so what? I'm like, what do you mean, so what? It's just so simple. And it fits the hand well. There's something about a good single stack 9mm steel pistol. I don't know. If you think I'm crazy, then that's fine, but I'm telling you, something about it. So I was thinking. And I decided to talk about this today because you know what? I feel like I was holding off, but I was thinking about this. I have a couple of dead air Odessas. All right. But I've had some bad experiences with them, and that's with regard to quality and general fit and finish and poor manufacturing, nitride issues that cause rust and pitting in the silencers. It was disappointing to me, just not my thing. I'm not into that. It's just something that, like, you know, not everyone cares about things like this. I'm just someone who does, and that's a personal preference thing. You know, you may not care, but I'm just going to give you my experience and why I'm not kind of feeling that. I have tested that silencer a lot, the Odessa, and I have found it acceptable for self-defense use. I have, and more on that in the next topic. We'll talk about that on the next topic. And although self-defense, I guess, is one of the goals for this gun, the P210, I don't think the Odessa is a silencer that I would say complements this gun. It's not that I wouldn't want to use it on the gun for a technical reason. It will probably allow me to see the sights, you know what I mean? But it's just not a quality match for the gun. I feel like, at the risk of, I don't mean to be rude, but I feel like it would be putting a sight mark scope on the fixed rifle like I did. You know what I mean? Will it work? Absolutely. Absolutely. Will you get the job done? Yes. Yes, you will. You definitely will get the job done, but will you feel unclean? you run the risk of not fulfilling the prophecy and angering the suppression gods, frankly. You see, there are standards to uphold, here? There are. And you can't just go putting any old silencer on a Sig P210. It's not right. It's just not right. And if the silencer is going to rust, come on, man. It's not right, man. It's just not right. Like, and okay, let me go back for a second talking about the SiteMark scope. Frankly, I don't want to talk bad about SiteMark like that because that SiteMark Pinnacle I have, yeah, sure. Is it heavy? Absolutely. Does it have the best glass? No. Is it decent? Oh, you bet your... Yeah, it's decent. It's better than the previous scope I used for 10 years. I mean, there are levels to this, but it's a good scope, and it performed well, and it held zero, and yeah. I mean, so I guess the analogy I used with that SiteMark scope on a fixed rifle, maybe that's not the best analogy for this. I don't know. I don't know what I guess my I'm struggling to come up with another analogy for you to get my point across, but I think you get the point about a poor quality item on something high quality. I guess that's kind of what I'm saying. Okay. So I started thinking about this, and I have been thinking a lot about the Erector 9. I really have, because it's so configurable. It's so light. It's so modular. It's so new. It's so sexy. It's interesting. You know what I mean? It's like, it's that new, right? It's that new. It's new. You look at it, you're like, whoa, yeah. You know what I mean? So I've obviously been interested in the product. You know, being able to manufacture a silencer like that and have it be assembled by the user and have it be aligned when it is assembled, like, you know, axially, I can tell you, like, being the owner of a couple of Odessas, like, which is, it's like what Q did with their Erector, the original Erector silencer, the 22, like, the Odessa, like, Dead Air did not do that right with the Odessa. Like, I can tell you that. I have it. I own them. Like, the method of tightening it and loosening it, it's clunky, and like the marks that delineate the alignment are just, they had so much promise, but like my marks were like destroyed in like an RMA, and like then you look through the bore and you see that, you know, they EDM'd it, right? But I mean, you can see how far it is off. You're like, oh my God, like that is like, it's crazy. It's just not, like, you can see how crooked the whole thing is. It was expensive, too. Like, and so, I don't know. I feel like they took the 22 Erector that Q made. You know, look, and I know that technically Q was not the first company in history to make a silencer like that. Like, okay, fine. But come on. Like, it was definitely the first in this market with the features it has in a long time. Like, there is no denying that. Okay, like, come on. So, I feel like Dead Air took the Erector concept and was like, man, that's awesome. And then made it in 9mm, and I think the concept of the Odessa is great. I think it's awesome. I think the diameter is awesome. I think it had so much promise. I loved the Dead Air Odessa so much. The concept. I love the concept so much that I was the first consumer to buy it from Silencer Shop on launch day. Okay? How do I know that? How could you possibly know that? How do you know someone that didn't work at Silencer Shop bought? Because I called Silencer Shop when Dead Air posted the Instagram post announcing the Odessa, because I had been following the teasers that they had been posting on their Instagram account. And I called Silencer Shop immediately and asked to buy it. And they told me, that's not even in our system yet. And I was like, cool, let me buy it. And they let me get a serial number assigned. Okay? Like, I went all in, full retail price. This was back whenever they released, I don't remember what year it was. It's been a while. Like, I went all in, full retail price, $200 tax stamp, just like you guys listening, okay? This was a science or consumer thing. Was this before Pew Science even started? I think so. Okay, so this was just me buying a silencer that I immediately wanted when I saw the features. I was like, I want that. I had never had a dead air silencer before. This is actually my first and only dead air product. Okay, so I bought this silencer. And then, yeah, so we don't have to go into my personal Odessa saga. That saga is still not even over. I'm sure I'll talk about it when I review the silencer. But I think because I've been because I'm starting to talk about pistol silencers, I see people talking about the Odessa and they keep asking me questions about it. Like, I could not hold back information. Like, this is public information. Like, this is my experience as a consumer with a silencer that I bought. Like, this is not like one of those things where, you know, you see those influencers on the internet and they're like, well, so-and-so gave me this and it's so great. And no, I don't do that. I don't do that for silencers. That's not what I do. So, like, I'm not going to sit here and let you not have good information, because a lot of you asked me about the silencer. And I was like, and hey, does it perform for your needs? Well, I'll have to talk about the testing when I release that data. And we can talk about that when we talk about it. I can tell you that I use the Odessa every day. I carried it every day in the four baffle configuration. I carried it every day for a self-defense weapon. Okay. I can also tell you it's not appropriate for doing that because it can't handle it. But anyway, so we don't have to go into that right now. We'll go into that later, but that's just a sneak peek for you. I guess to cap that off, that's probably one of the most, if not the most, disappointing NFA purchases of my entire NFA hobby. Like that was probably my biggest disappointment. I guess the only other thing that comes close, which was actually a bigger disappointment, but for a different reason, was the early MP5 clones by Todd Bailey. And if you know who that is, I'm sorry. And if you don't, well, don't worry about it. Don't Google it because you'll get depressed. Okay, so back to pistol silencers. The Erector 9, you know, You see it through the eyes of someone who has been there and done that with a 9mm modular silencer like that. You know, as a consumer, you see, you know, you, when you look at it as a consumer that has used silencers like this, I'm not talking about modular, like the rugged stuff is modular. That's simple. Okay? That's like easy peasy lemon squeezy. I mean, no, to give him credit, it's not super easy, but it's two pieces. Come on, there are challenges to two pieces, but there are not nearly as many challenges as there are to things like the Erector and the Odessa and the Erector 9. All right, it's a completely different animal, and when you look at it, you will see that the Erector 9 has really been engineered in a more intricate and smart way. It just has. Like, I can say that without shooting it, just because I've held it and I've disassembled it. There are levels to this. I will say there are definitely levels to this. Are the Erector 9 and the Odessa the same silencer? Not even close. Not even close. Does the Odessa have some features I wish the Erector 9 had? Yes. Diameter and color. Like, I want small diameter, and I want it black. Okay? That's, like, what I want. That's a personal preference. I want to see traditional pistol sights on a pistol. I want to use them to see over the silencer. I want the silencer black. I want it 9mm. I want it light, and I want it modular. That's what I want. Okay? And that's what the consumer in me wants. This is not, like, remember, like, don't get it twisted. I will be a gun consumer forever. So You know, I don't know if you guys think I just get free stuff all the time or something. Like, I don't. Like, I buy stuff. Okay, like, you think people like me in this industry? No. And so I'm still going to buy an Erector 9. I have it on order. I've had it on order right now. I'm just waiting. But for this Sig P210, will it be the best thing? Will it be the best silencer? And I mean, it very well might be. But if I'm considering a silencer of its diameter, I mean, I may as well consider the CGS and the rugged stuff too. You know what I mean? The Mod 9, the Mod 9 SK, the rugged Obsidian 9, the rugged Obsidian 45 for that matter. You've already seen that review on the website, right? So that's all quality stuff. Okay, the CGS stuff, the rugged stuff, excellent. Excellent quality. Excuse me. CGS, rugged, Q, all make quality stuff. I can assure you of that. Okay, I can assure you of that. But there is another path in this forest. There is another path. The forest of 9mm silencer confusion. There is the AAC Illusion 9, the Advanced Armament Corporation. It's gone. Might come back, but it's gone. Not counting on it. Not putting my eggs in that basket. I was going to say I never personally bought an AAC product. Because, you know, I shot them and I've seen them. And I've had other things going on and I just never really bought one. I have a Tyrant 9 sitting in the Pew Science library right now and it's cool. Fiance has a Tyrant 9M demo silencer sitting in Form 4 land and it's cool. I suppose technically that's an AAC product, but it's a demo and it's hers, but it's about to be ours. You know what I'm saying? So like I say when I haven't personally bought, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, that's not really true because I guess, you know, we will have one. But I guess what I'm trying to say is like I'm not a long-term user of like an AAC pistol silencer. Like that's just not my thing. Never had. I've always been using the SWR Trident. Like that's been my primary 9mm pistol silencer for over a decade. Okay. And so, but all these options I'm talking about, those are all 1.375 inch outer diameter. Still normal for 9mm silencer land. Right? It's pretty normal. It wasn't always normal, but it's been normal for a while. Now, the Illusion 9 is different. Remember the Evolution 9 from AAC? That one, was it 1 1/8? Am I going to have to Google that right now? Let me Google it right now. Jeez. All right. AAC. If I could type AAC. Evolution 9 diameter. Enter. Yeah. Oh, 1.25. What did I say? Did I say 1 1/8? Oh, okay. 1 1/4. I said 1 1/8. I was wrong. Yeah. Okay. I meant 1 1/4. Yeah. Yeah. So the Evolution 9 was 1 1/4 inches in diameter. Not super quiet. Because it wasn't big enough to be super quiet with that technology, with the K-baffles, used K-baffles. Pretty good silencer, not super quiet, but functional. Okay, good quality silencer. Fit and finish were good. A lot of people had that silencer. The Evolution 9 was very popular. Old school, very popular silencer. AAC made the Illusion 9. You know who designed the Illusion 9? It was Mike Smith at AAC. He designed the Illusion 9. Mike Smith, he's a cool dude. I've met Mike. He's nice. He is one of the ones who just got his SIG P210 barrel threaded as well. He's one of the guys. Like I was telling you, there's two other guys. He's another one of the guys. So shout out to Mike Smith. He works at Dead Air now, actually. Mike Smith works at Dead Air now, relatively recently, within the past couple of years. So good for Dead Air. Maybe, you know, maybe he'll make a cool pistol silencer there. I'm hoping he will. I think if they got Mike Smith, that's a good question. I don't know what kind of technology they'll bring, but I know he has an eye for detail. He does. I like his designs. So the Illusion 9, it's a silencer that is around the same size as the Evolution 9. And that's why I brought that up. But the Illusion 9 is eccentric. So it has eccentricity to it. It's like the old school Maxim silencers, you know? I don't know if you've seen the historical Maxim silencers that were had eccentricity to the bore. It's a silencer that drops below the bore line. It's like the Silencer Co., like the Osprey, right? Like that Silencer Co. silencer that had inspiration from the Advanced Armament Black Box, right? Which is that prototype 45 bore silencer. It was an eccentric silencer. It was a prototype, and we never got to buy it. So that never made it into production. So, you know, have this kind of weird backward design inspirations, right? Where you have the Maxim silencer and like from the early 1900s, and then you have AAC making a prototype 45 caliber pistol silencer called the Black Box, which was like, you know, I don't even know if it was that quiet for the time, but at least it was cool. It was innovative. And then I thought it was innovative. And then, you know, Silencer Co. was like, oh, we want to make one. And they made one. But it's like, you know. I think the closest, I mean, I don't know. I'm just not a fan of it. Like, I'm just not, it's not my thing. So, like, to me, when you really think about it, and this is just kind of an opinion, but, you know, the closest thing to a black box that you can get is the Illusion 9. I mean, it's not the same silencer at all, but it's made by Advanced Armament Corporation. And at least the fit and finish should be decent, right? And the design should be pretty good. I mean, it's not going to be, I know it's not going to be that quiet. I can tell just by looking at the baffles and like by looking at the silencer. But I think Mike Smith is pretty good at designing pistol silencers, so I bet it's going to be not worse than the Evolution 9. I bet you, which means that it's not going to be the most terrible silencer there ever was, which means that it'll be usable for a pistol. You see, and then that's, we're going to get into that in the next topic. But okay, so to recap this. Not the lightest silencer, definitely not the heaviest silencer, but you can use your existing standard height pistol sights. It's not modular, but it's functional. Okay, so there you go. These are the pluses and minuses, right? This is like, now you get a window into some of my decision process when I buy stuff. Okay, like what do I need it to do? What am I willing to give up? There's always compromise. You're always going to give something up. I mean, mostly. So there is a problem. You cannot get these anymore. But I mean, you can, because I found some. I found an old demo unit, and then I also found two new units. I'm getting all three of them. So one for testing for you guys, so you kind of know. And so for the industry knows. So if the industry knows how it sounds, maybe the industry can make it better. You know what I mean? So one for testing, one for me. And my SIG, my P210, for now. And one as a surprise for my fiance. Because I figure since you can't get them anymore, and I run the risk of her liking mine, maybe for like a home defense gun or something, I would rather she have one than have to steal mine. You know what I mean? Not that she would, because, you know, she's not like that, but I kind of want her to have her own. But that's just a little surprise for her. She doesn't listen to this podcast, so she's not going to know. And if any of you tell her, you're dead. So I will let you know my thoughts on it. Never heard one. Never held one. Crazy, right? I have no idea. Like, I'm just like, I'm just going to buy this. I bought a couple of metric pistons. Yeah. What, you think I'm just going to, like, run this on a half 28 barrel like a Neanderthal? No, just kidding. No, it should be awesome. Is it going to be too loud? Is this silencer going to be too loud? Well, that depends. It depends on what I'll be using it for and how I'll be using it. Doesn't it? Yeah. It depends. So that actually brings me to topic two at a time of 36 minutes and 15 seconds. Okay. Yeah. Center fire pistol silencer sound signature. Like how loud are they? You know what I mean? Like actual use. Like what do you need? What are your expectations? What are you using a pistol for? Okay. So I've spoken about this before. Pistol silencers are loud when they're used with full power ammunition. Okay. So that's something to keep in mind. Now let's put some context to it. Let's put some context to it. When your suppression rating at the ear can't get out of the 30s, what do? You shoot it a bunch without hearing protection to mess up your ears? Or do you shoot it sparingly without ears and mostly shoot with hearing protection or when hunting or in an emergency or whatever, right? Exactly. Okay. You already know the answer. All right. I'm going to go to my website. All right. One moment here. Let's see. PewScience.com. I'm going to go click on the silencer sound standard. I'm going to go to rankings. Okay, loading. All right, I'm going to go to the rankings table. I'm just going to go subsonic 9mm and hit only. That way it's only going to show me 9mm results. Okay, scroll down. Okay, ear suppression rating. The highest in the table right now, and I need to do more testing. Also, I've improved methodology for pistol testing, so these numbers, I mean, they're probably not going to change that much, if at all, but I do need to double check some stuff. But 40.4 at the ear, guys, like what? Like, I mean, that's good, but that's the rugged Obsidian 45 in the long configuration on a handgun, on a 9mm pistol. Average. That's not even first round pop. That's average. So you know first round pop's louder. Now, the short configuration is the next best, 39.9. You see how like it has nothing, is almost nothing to do with the silencer being quiet and everything to do with the sound out of the ejection port because it's a pistol. Pistols are loud, guys. And then the Mod 9, 36.9 at the ear. The Trident 9, 36.4 at the ear. I mean, at the muzzle, the Obsidian 45, because it has a big 45 bore hole in it, 53.4 at the muzzle. The CGS group is 55.2 at the muzzle. Trident 9, over 10 years old, 53 at the muzzle. And, you know, the short version of the Obsidian 45, 37.5 at the muzzle. You see how, yeah. Right? But you're not worried about the muzzle when you're the shooter. You're worried about the ear signature. And those are not, I mean, like the Mod 9, which is like everyone says is like super duper quiet, 36.9 at the ear. Why is that? Yeah, it's because it's a pistol. All right, and there's a full size pistol silencer. You're putting back pressure on that pistol barrel, and you're gonna get sound out of the ejection port. And this is not an AR-15. You are not tuning your. I mean, you can tune your handguns for silencers, but it is not nearly as effective as a tuned-in AR-15. I promise you that, because you're not gas-operated here, okay? So, and then adding mass is going to be a problem. So what do you have to do? You got a spring weight, and what do we say about springs, right? So it's dependent on displacement. The spring resistance is dependent on displacement. It doesn't start from rest like inertia does. So anyway, keeping your pistol locked longer can sometimes be a challenge, especially depending on the pistol. And this is why some pistols are so much better for sound suppression, because of the lock time, because they have inherent mechanical characteristics that make them favorable, like the HKP30L, like the SIG P226. Like we will find out about the SIG P210. The P210 might be terrible. But again, we're going to find out. I'm going to have to test it. I'll let you know. But hey, maybe it's awesome. The 1911 is a good 45 pistol host. So I'm told. Okay. So yeah, I just wanted to put this in perspective right now. This is not to tell you not to get a pistol silencer for 9mm. Because, you know, you can use them on a lot of other stuff besides handguns. But I use mine, like, okay, here's a really good example. We're out of power here, and, you know, I like to keep a weapon on me. And when there's a situation like this where, like, we don't have power and the cell phone networks are down, and if something goes wrong, like if I'm on my own, you bet your butt I'm going to at least have a handgun with me most places. And you know I'm going to have a silencer on it, because I want to have confidence that I'm going to maintain all my awareness if I need to use that gun. That's what I do. And there, you can argue the merits of that. That's not the point of this. My point is, if I'm using that, am I going to want to hold a pistol with a 8-inch silencer hanging off the end of it? No. So I've had my Mod 9 SK on my P30L for the whole week. And I'm going to post a picture of it with this podcast so you can see what it looks like. I'm a firm believer personally in short pistol silencers on full-size handguns. I think it's really smart, because I think you're not going to lose a lot of suppression. And I think that for the shooter, that is. And I think that's what matters. Now, if you're going to go assassinate somebody in a hotel room, well, yeah, use the freaking full-size pistol silencer, dude. You don't want to wake the dead. But you're not doing that right now, probably. I mean, you might be. It's fine. I'm not here to judge. All I'm saying is that, you know, consider your use case. And that's why you have the suppression rating, the muzzle, and the ear. Remember, the ear is for you. The muzzle is for everyone around you. The overall composite suppression rating kind of gives a full story, or an abbreviated story of the whole thing, so you can judge systems on a level playing field holistically. But if you really want to see what's loud and what's not, look at the muzzle and the ear ratings. They're there for you. They help. Trust. Okay. Oh, I got derailed. So this is not... That's how I treat 9mm pistol silencers. This is me personally. That's how I treat them for myself on a centerfire 9mm handguns. It's not a Hyperion on a bolt gun thing. Quiet. It's not an MP5 SD thing. It's not a mini fix with a full Nelson. Okay? This isn't a Ninja Quiet. Okay? Centerfire 9mm handguns are not quiet. They're not. And if I see one more marketing video about a 9mm, like, oh, it's a quiet, it's not quiet. You might be using super slow downloaded ammo. Sure, you can make them quiet with specialty ammunition, but nobody got time for that. Okay, all right. So when you think about it like that, it starts to open your world a little bit, doesn't it? Because then you start to consider utility, right? And this is why I originally got the Dead Air Odessa. And it's why I got 3 Illusion 9s. And it's why I'm going to buy the Erector 9. And it's why I use the Mod 9 SK from CGS more than I use the full-size Mod 9. Okay, you feel me? This is me. This is just telling you what I'm not telling you to do this. I'm saying this is what I am doing as a consumer, as a sponsor consumer. So okay, stay tuned for a review on the SKA. I haven't done that run yet. Yeah, no, I haven't done that. I tested it though. Stay tuned. It's a neat silencer. Now, I guess the point of this topic is to help people understand how to be honest with yourselves when it comes to pistol use. Are you going to use the silencers on things besides pistols? Well, that's different. Okay, that's different. Now you're talking subgun stuff, all right? And frankly, that's a completely different conversation for another episode. Also, another conversation is putting subgun silencers on pistols and handguns. That's ludicrous. Stop doing that. That's dumb. Like, why would you do that? Like, like, they're big and heavy. Like, what are you doing? Okay, do whatever you want. But I mean, that's, come on. All right. Topic three at a time of 46 minutes and 8 seconds. Yeah, I tried to do that second one pretty quickly there. Okay, topic three. Yeah. New sound signature review this week. And a back pressure metric update. I'm revising it to revision 2. I'm improving the Pew Science methodology. Oh, I'm nervous. Oh, excuse me. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Okay, oh my goodness. So, new data coming to you this week. I thought I was... Man. See, because today's Wednesday. I usually do this on Tuesday nights. It's Wednesday night. So, ordinarily, you get the review tomorrow. But I don't know. I think I'm going to have to postpone that till Friday. Oh, man. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to release it tomorrow morning. I think I'm going to release it Friday because I'll release the podcast tomorrow morning. Yeah. So because I worked hard on a review for you this past weekend. Like, I was shut in from the cold. Okay, the power wasn't out yet, but I went hard in the paint. I went hard. So that's coming. And you know, also it's a manufacturer you haven't seen in Pew Science reviews yet. So buckle up for that. When I was performing the analysis in preparation for this week's review, I noticed some things. Oh man. Since, you know, and I was feeling a little adventurous, I started pulling on a thread. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when you pull a little thread and it starts to unravel the fabric and you're like, yeah, if I stop now, I can just cut this thread or I can just pull it and see what happens. I pulled it, and some stuff came apart. But what I found underneath was super cool. Okay, enough of this analogy. It's getting dumb. I'm still messing with it, but I was hoping to have more time to mess with this week. It's already freaking Wednesday, and that shows you the impact of this storm has had. I've had no power to look at the data. But I did end up adding another parameter to the back pressure metric. Let me talk about it. Let's talk about it. This entire time, I have been talking about rise time to peak impulse. 1 meter left of the muzzle. Okay? Rise time. And my major postulation has been momentum transfer apex. Okay? Momentum transfer and then decay. And comparing that from silencer to silencer. Okay. So, you can definitely compare the rise time to peak impulse from silencer to silencer. And sure enough, it does correlate with observed back pressure. It does. But I did have the feeling that the correlation would only be valid for certain types of baffles. Or maybe certain types of flow or certain types of flow restriction, certain types of back pressure. And I think I was right. I don't know. I think I mentioned it a couple times on the podcast where I thought maybe, the correlation would change based on type of silencer. And I think I was right about that. I thought to myself, this past weekend, I thought to myself, if I'm zoning in on a rate or a speed at which flow is occurring, okay, a flow rate, why on earth am I only using the time component of the rate? Like, I mean, I wanted it to be simple, frankly. I mean, that's why. Like, I was making assumptions, because usually what you do when you're developing something is you make assumptions to eliminate complexity, because you want to make sure you get the simplest answer to a problem. Okay? I wanted this to be super simple, both in computation and in theory. I wanted this to be simple, simple, simple. I mean, simple's good. The simpler the scaling and the metric relationship to real field data, the better. Like, that's my philosophy, right? You do not want to complicate things. Like, that complicating stuff is usually it sucks. So simple is good, and approximate is good. Approximate is great. It's great when it works. So if you get correlation, great. Okay. But turns out I do not think looking at only the rise time is good enough. And I started to notice this a couple of reviews back. But I wanted to see how it played out. And then I determined this weekend, I think I wanted to get more complicated. Not that I don't know if we need to. I think we do, but I want to, because I want to see where it goes. And the benefit of this is that you're seeing real research unfold in real time publicly. Like, you're never going to see this, guys. Like, this is, I'm telling you, like, this is definitely, like, I don't have to tell you this, but I am, because I think we're all learning this together, so it's cool. Now, let's go back to this. So when you talk about rate and you talk about an amplitude over a duration, right? You talk about a slope of a line, right? Rise over run. Remember that from school? Amplitude over duration. Okay. So it's not just the time it takes to get to maximum positive phase impulse, right? It's not just the time it takes. It's not just how long it took, but it's the rate at which it got there. Does that make sense? How fast can it get there? Like, when I ask you how fast something gets there and I give you a time, you might say, oh, okay, that's the answer. It got there in 2 milliseconds. That's how fast it was. It's like, yeah, that is how fast it was. Except we're talking about flow rate. So if it gets there first, it wins. It wins the flow race. But that's actually wrong, because it only wins the race. It only wins the race, but it didn't win the flow rate race. Does that make sense? Okay, so I'm trying to explain this. So I think that's what we're missing. I think we were assuming that if gas got out of silencer A before it got out of silencer B, silencer A had less restrictive flow. Okay, that would be correct if both silencers were restricting flow in the same way. What if silencer B let out way more gas than silencer A, but it took longer to get to that maximum flow? How would you know which silencer had a higher flow rate? You would have to compare the rate, not just the time, right? So you would have to compare the amplitude. So what is that physically in the units of concern? Well, that's impulse over time. And what are the units of impulse on the curves on pewscience.com? Well, they're Pascal milliseconds. So what's the relationship? It's Pascal millisecond over millisecond. It's the rate of impulse change on the initial slope of the curve, of the impulse curve, right? Okay. So that's what I did. I went back to every single test published on pewscience.com, and I computed the slope of every single impulse curve 1 meter left of the muzzle for every single shot and every single test. Okay. I looked at all of it. Then, after that, I looked at the data, and I developed a metric proportional to that. And then I applied a data transform to take into account the non-linearity noted in the data set. Then I compared it to the previous back pressure metric. Okay, so it's just, okay, so let me back up. So I went to every single impulse curve on every single test, 1 meter left of the muzzle. I got the slope. All right. Yeah, it took a while. And then I had to apply it to some kind of metric to like, I can't just give you the slopes because you'd be like, what? So I had to, like, you know, divide it and do some other stuff to it. So I came up with a metric, and then I was like, oh, that's like highly nonlinear. This is exactly what we thought would happen. Highly nonlinear, right? Remember when I talked about back pressure and I was like, this is probably highly nonlinear. And you're like, what are you talking about? It's like, well, it's highly nonlinear. It's like, it doesn't, it's like the as a silencer restricts flow more, the slope or the rate of flow is not linear. So the relationship between the back pressure metric or measuring back pressure and the actual flow restriction is nonlinear. So what I did was I took the new metric, the Rev2 metric, and I applied a data transform to it to help us understand and look at it on a scale that would, like, be more easy to stomach. It's just the same data. It's just, it has a data transform. I don't know. I guess a data transform is like, it's like, you ever go on the back of a cereal box when you're a kid and you look at, like, the secret code to, like, get the, like, or like with the decoder ring to, like, get a new language. It's like that. It's like basically a method of mathematics to where it's giving you the exact same data you had before, but there's a decoder ring so that when you apply the decoder ring to it and you get your new way to look at it, it makes more sense. Like, I'm probably doing a really bad job of explaining that. But anyway, so that's what I did. So what happened? So I took that and I compared it to the old way I was doing it. So, like, we had, like, back pressure metric version 1, and then, like, back pressure metric version 2. Okay, so I compared the two, and I was like, oh, well, I mean, am I going to be, like, am I going to have to tell everyone that looks at Pew Science that, like, I was wrong about every single back pressure metric, or am I going to just have to tell them, like, one or two things that I was wrong about? You know what I mean? Like what happened? So, like, I plotted the two. Turns out, most of the stuff still kind of sits where it sits, like, relative to each other, which was cool. I was like, oh, that's good. Well, that's good. Okay. So I wasn't completely crazy when I came up with the initial theory of just the rise times. So it's like, okay. But some of it shifted. Some stuff that we thought had low back pressure still does. It still does. But not as low as we thought. Okay? Some stuff is definitely lower back pressure, and it makes sense. And some stuff is now higher, and actually does make sense too. And you're going to have to wait and see what changes and what doesn't. And that's the crazy part of this. It's a preliminary metric, and it has evolved to version 2. So buckle up for that. Major breakthrough, I think. I am like chomping at the bit to tell you. I want to tell you. Okay, I'm going to tell you. Oh, at the risk of... I need to look at it more, but at the risk of being wrong, but... excuse me. Let me look at something. Let me tell you something real quick now. Real quick, yeah. Oh, yeah. Two... I wouldn't say major shifts, but two shifts that, like, make more sense now that we think about it. But nonetheless, you'll notice that are a little bit different. The Hyperion K and the Surefire SOCOM 762 RC2. Both of those silencers were silencers that actually shifted in the back pressure scale relative to other silencers more than the other silencers did. And the reason for that is that their flow rate was slower, but their rise time was fast. Okay? Because this is a dynamic event, so it's not linear. So right now, the version 2 of this is saying that the Hyperion K still has lower back pressure than the Resonator K. Okay? Still has lower back pressure than the Resonator K. But it's higher than the Sandman K by quite a bit. Okay? Like, the basically, the Resonator K and the Hyperion K have pretty much the same back pressure in the, with the back pressure metric version 2 algorithm. But the Sandman K is still the way down low one, which definitely makes sense. It definitely makes sense because I'm looking at this and I'm like, yeah, the Hyperion K has low back pressure, but man, it having the same back pressure as the Sandman K, I was like, I don't know. I was like, that's what the data says, but is that right? So this was a result that I was like, okay, I buy that. I think I buy that. We're still going to have to test that, you know? But like right now, I mean, my testing of the Helios DT, which is the same thing as the Hyperion K, not the Helios QD, but the Helios DT, the same thing as the Hyperion K on a gas gun, it had low back pressure. So this makes sense. I mean, and it being barely lower than the Resonator K in back pressure, that's still low back pressure. Resonator K is small, okay? That's lower than the Razor, the rugged Razor, which is pretty low back pressure too. It's lower than the Sandman S, okay? But now the Surefire is a little bit more than the Razor and Sandman S now. And that makes sense, right? Like, it's about on par with the Sandman S. If you put, like, pretty close, like 5% or so in this metric space I've developed. I mean, it's pretty close. That's a little bit of a sneak peek on some of the changes. I don't think there was really much else. I'm kind of looking at my stuff here to try to see if there's anything that kind of flip-flopped, but other than the Surefire and the Hyperion K, it looks like the Trash Panda. No? All pretty, for those size silencers, yeah, this is all pretty. So it's the relationships, at least the relative, like what silencer has more back pressure than another silencer, all pretty on par with what it was before. Okay, so there's nothing crazy. That's important for you to know. Now, I hope you guys understand that the original back pressure was preliminary, as it does say on the website in bold letters. Now, you should know that the suppression rating is not changing. Okay, that's the suppression rating is final. That is not a preliminary metric. Suppression rating is what it is. Now, the back pressure metric, now that we're going to be on version 2 that you're going to see this week, revision 2, it's still under development. Like, the back pressure metric is evolving. It is continuously changing, and we are performing research. But it is evolving to version 2, so buckle up for that. Major breakthrough. I think this is a major breakthrough. I think it is. But remember, the back pressure metric and the suppression rating are decoupled. Those are decoupled. When I compute the back pressure metric, I do not consider the suppression rating. And when I compute the suppression rating, I do not consider the back pressure metric. Okay. They operate completely separately. They're completely decoupled. Now, by the way, speaking of back pressure metric study, the rugged silencers, the ones I said I tested on gas guns, remember, the Surge in its long and short configuration, the Radiant in the long and short configuration, the Razor. You remember those I've done? the new version of the metric, the revision 2 of the metric, it still correlates with our test data for that. Okay, you see what I mean? So like the stuff that we was well understood, it's still correlating. It's fine with the revision 2. And so I'll show you the comparison of the two correlations actually as a supplement in this week's review. Like it's completely unrelated to the silencer that I'm reviewing. At least the rugged stuff is, but I'm going to put it in there with it. Frankly, I didn't have time to write another article, but I'm going to put it in there too. So you're going to see, and you're going to see, oh, before revision one of the back pressure metric did this. Now revision two of the back pressure metric did this. Here's how the rugged silencers stack up to each other in relation to that. You know, any questions or whatever, you know what I mean? So it'll be there in black and white. You know, so you can see it, and that way, you know, I'm just trying to like, I realize like this is super complicated, and I already know people are going to be confused because they're going to see the Hyperion K and they're going to see the Surefire and they're like, how come before you said I bought a Hyperion K because I was like, dude, I'm sorry, like I told, like don't, for one, I take no responsibility for anything, two, I don't care what you buy. And three, this is the back pressure metric is preliminary. So the Hyperion K still has, is still being shown to have low back pressure. It's just not as low as maybe we thought it was. Okay. And same with the Surefire. The Surefire, we know it has low back pressure, right? We know it does for its size. It has lower back pressure than the Trash Panda. Like we know that. Now it's between the Trash Panda and the Razor, which is still low back pressure for how big that silencer is. Okay? Okay. I think, what was it before? What was the Surefire before? Oh, yeah. The Surefire was, like, below the Resonator K. I was like, I don't know about that. It's like, that can't be right. I mean, well, maybe it could. I was like, well, but I hadn't done all the testing. All the gas gun testing. That's why I was so wondering. I was like, can someone please do this for me so I can understand? So now I feel more comfortable with this now. This makes sense. And it does. When you talk about the rate, right? You talk about the rate of change and the flow. When the whole time we thought we were talking about rate, and we were. That, and that's the crazy part of this. The crazy part about flow rate is that if you only look at the time component and the flow rate between products is changing in a certain way relative to that time, and it's the same type of silencer, the amplitude at maximum flow rate is also going to be changing at the same amount of time. So it's a coincidence that it works. Does that make sense? Like, isn't that crazy? And you're going to see that with the rugged silencers. The rugged silencers, that case study somewhat validated the revision one of the back pressure metric. But the problem with that study, the problem with that rugged case study, is that all the silencers have the same type of baffle, and all the silencers are the same diameter, and they all have the same type of mount, and they all have the same type of expansion chamber, pretty much. So the flow rate, although the flow rate is different in all of those silencers, it's different because it's changing the number of baffles and the baffle spacing, but it's not changing much else. It's not changing the flow type. And that's why we needed a bigger sample case study. And I haven't tested the OSS stuff yet. That's coming up because obviously you can't test in the weather like it is now. But I tell you what, I am so glad that we hit this now. And I found this now because it is going to, I think what it did was it made the back pressure metric, like, I know it says revision two, but it might get final soon. Because we're going to test this OSS stuff, and I bet you, my hypothesis is, I could be wrong, my hypothesis is that OSS stuff is going to get to peak impulse pretty quick, but I bet you the amplitude is super high too, and I bet you the flow rate goes through the roof. And so I bet you the back pressure metric version 2 captures that. I bet you it does. And if it doesn't, well, then I'm wrong. But hey, this is progress, and I'm excited because it's like, and you know, the silencer you're gonna see this week, you're gonna see, and I even did that. In the review you're going to see this week, what I did, I put the new silencer that you haven't seen before, and I showed its back pressure metric with the old way and the new way. So you can see that the new way makes way more sense too. And that silencer was actually one of the reasons I looked back on this, because I was like, that can't be right. I got the answer first. I was like, no. I was like, something's wrong. And I started asking people. I was like, have you? And it turns out I couldn't get any information from anybody. I could only get it from like the manufacturer. And like, I was like, I don't know. I don't think they know what I'm asking. And so I had to basically do it myself. So I did. All right. But right now, that review you're going to see, it's super long because of this. Like, I went ham because I put like all the back pressure metric stuff in the review, which might not, in hindsight, might not have been the best thing to do. But what I'll do probably is I'll write another article after this later about back pressure once I publish this. Like maybe like a current state of back pressure analysis, like in preparation for testing the OSS stuff maybe. You know what I mean? Like it'll be like a foreshadowing maybe. Wouldn't that be cool? Because you know what's really neat, guys? What's really cool about looking at this in the terms of rate and Pascal milliseconds over milliseconds, we're starting to assign physical quantities to the back pressure metric in a way that we might be able to derive analytical equations to. That's exciting. Okay, that's so much. What? Oh yeah, let's go to topic four at a time of 1 hour. I'm scared I'm going to lose power. I'm trying to hurry. 1 hour, 11 minutes and 30 seconds. I can't believe I haven't lost power yet. Okay. Topic four, welcome to new Pew Science members. Thank you for your support. I could not do this without you guys. I was working on that metric, you know, the back pressure metric. And during that, this past weekend, I was like, guys, I barely ate food. Like I was like, you know, it's like you're in the zone and you're like, you're not even moving. And you're like, oh, I got to go to the bathroom. So you go to the bathroom and you're like, oh, I don't have time for this. I got to keep working. It's like one of those. I was on a roll. So I saw some folks join Pew Science. And I was like, yes, this is awesome. Keep doing that. More support. Yes. And it gave me motivation to push harder. So I was like, yeah. So I was like, yo, man, it's like a perpetual motion machine, but not. I went hard in the paint. Sometimes I do that. Sometimes I get on a roll. That's what I do. But I couldn't do it without you. I could not do it without you guys. And the thing is, it does take significant energy and time to do this. It does. On top of the monetary cost, which is getting more expensive now because I'm having to buy a lot of silencers. On top of the monetary cost, having to support, you know, I don't know. There's the time it takes and the energy it takes to do this is a lot. And having the support from you guys so that I can work this hard on this, it's required, I think, for me to not just stop. Like I don't think I would do it without your support. So it is sometimes tempting to just completely stop because it's so much, but I do believe we are building something important and we are making progress. And so it will continue. And I thank you for listening to the podcast. Thank you for engaging with me in discussions about silencers. I hope I give you good information. I hope it gives you some food for thought. You know, like the stuff I talked about earlier on that episode about the Odessa. If you have an Odessa, don't feel too bad. You know what? If yours hasn't rusted yet, maybe you got one that had nitriding that was good. It's stainless steel. It shouldn't rust. But hey, when you manufacture things wrong, they break, right? I mean, that's what we've seen this year. It happens. You know, so I don't want you guys to ever feel like, you know, I say something that makes you feel bad or, you know, don't worry about that stuff. But I am going to be honest with you. I'm not going to pull punches because I don't think it helps the industry or you or me to hide anything. I want to be transparent with you at all times. And when I can and it's appropriate to do so, I will. And I think it's appropriate. I think everything we talked about today is appropriate. I think it is and I think it's good. So thank you for listening. Thank you for your support. And this is for you. This is all for you. So stay tuned this week for more data. It's awesome. Okay. Talk to you folks again soon.